The ancient Essenes tell us in their texts 2,500 years ago, very precise language, that every human lives in this earth in three worlds at the same time. We live in the world of thought, the world of feeling, and the world of emotion. And their texts actually say to us, when these three become one, when the thought and the feeling and the emotion are merged, are married together into a single potent force, then when you say to the mountain, move, the mountain will move. Now, I used to believe that this was a metaphor. And now I have seen in the monasteries of Tibet, and I've seen with the holy and the sacred people in Bolivia and Peru, in the native traditions of the desert southwest, in the medicineless hospitals in Beijing, China, this is not a metaphor. It is a literal fact. When thought, feeling, and emotion become one, we literally can change the stuff our world is made of. We can rearrange the atoms of matter through the belief waves that emanate from our heart. So the question is, when we are experiencing judgment and ego, what is that saying to us really? Well, the first thing it's telling us is that we are not in our heart, because the heart has no judgment and the heart has no ego. When we are experiencing those qualities, it is coming from our mind. It's coming from our inner child. It's coming from our fear, from our families, our perceptions, our conditioning. It's not coming from our heart. When something hurts us in life, when something crosses our path that causes us pain, our first reaction is to move away from it, to say, I don't want that. And that is when the judgment comes in. If we can embrace the experiences when someone or an experience hurts us in life, not that we like the experience or we want to have it again, but the ancients say that we should bless the experience. And this sounds very strange, to bless the things that hurt you. But here's what happens. When we begin to bless the things that cause us the pain, the blessing is simply the acknowledgement. When you say, I bless the person who has just been dishonest with me. I bless the person who has violated my trust, betrayed my confidence. And you say that again and again, and you say it out loud. What begins to happen is the verbal expression brings the physical energy up from the heart into the body. And soon your body becomes warm and you have tears in your eyes. And you say, I bless this person, I bless this person. And it is the blessing that relieves the charge of the judgment for just a moment. And that's all we need. Because for just a moment, when the charge is relieved, we can replace the hurt with something else. And the ancients say that that something else is what we call beauty. Beauty is a powerful force in our world, and it already exists everywhere. The ancient Essenes and the Native Americans alike, they say that beauty is already everywhere in everything. Our job is to find that beauty, to seek it out. So rather than judging the experiences when they come to us, if we can look at each experience as a blessing, and when we find ourselves hurt, say, again, yes, I feel hurt, so acknowledge it first. Secondly, what is this hurt saying to me? What voice am I hearing? What does it tell me about my life? And bless the hurt now that is giving us information about ourselves. As we begin that experience, it is much easier then for our thoughts, feelings, and emotions to become one so that we can move that mountain when it comes across our path. The question then that the scientist asks is, if we know the experiences work, if we know that when one person or a group of people come together and they share a common experience in their heart for a period of time, such as the International Peace Project in the Middle East, where people came together to feel the feelings of peace during the Lebanese-Israeli War in the early 1980s, during the time they created those feelings, statistically, terrorist activities dropped to zero, crimes against people declined, emergency hospital room visits declined, traffic accidents declined. And so the scientists ask, if this prayer is so powerful, then why didn't it last? And this is the crux, the secret of the ancient traditions that has been missed by so many people today, because this experience in our heart was viewed by the scientist as something you do for a moment in time. So you go about your daily life, and at a certain time, you stop your daily life and you do this heart experience, this prayer. And when the prayer is over, you stop the prayer and go back to your life. And the crux of our most cherished, sacred, and ancient traditions is very clear that this experience of the heart is not something that we do. It is something that we become. It is something that we live in our lives. Life becomes the prayer. Every moment of every day is the prayer. And because this modality of prayer, it's called the lost mode of prayer, feeling-based prayer, because the prayer is based in a feeling, and we can have a feeling all the time. We can have a feeling in our cars, driving on the highway. We can have a feeling in the office, in the school, with our families, alone in the park. We can always have a feeling, and that means we can always be in prayer. But it's not something that we do in a moment. It's a way of living. It's a way of life. It's something that we become. And when we do that, the prayer never ends. And that is the secret to maintaining the powerful effects that are documented by science and that the ancient texts and the Essenes tell us are possible in our lives. If I had the opportunity, if I came to this world from another world, and I could ask one question of myself in this lifetime, based on what I knew here that I couldn't find in that other world, I would ask the question, what is the one thing that we have in this world that would wake us up and remind us that we're a family and that we are more than the differences that have separated us in the past, and that we're too precious to kill ourselves in war? What is the one thing that could be awakened in this lifetime and shared with every human on the face of the earth that would remind them of that truth? Because I believe it is a truth. That's what I would ask. The principle of resonance is perhaps one of the most powerful principles in nature, because it allows tremendous change to happen very quickly with a very few people in the kinds of things that we're talking about now. And the reason is because if those few people learn the language of resonance with the divine matrix, with the field, if they choose peace and healing in their bodies, and they find that they can convey that in the divine matrix, the focused power of knowing the language is stronger than the chaotic power of not understanding the language. So many people in chaos is what we see in our cities right now. A very few people focused that understand the language may transcend. I'm not going to say that they overpower or that they win. I'll say that they transcend. They are no longer locked into the negativity from those other people, and it's because of the principle of resonance. When we say the practice for many people in the West, again, it sounds like something that we do sometimes. And the key to all of the traditions is that it becomes a way of life rather than something that we do sometimes. Our conditioning in the West is that our spiritual practice is something that we do at the end of the day, when the children are fed and the bills are paid and the dishes are done and the clothes are clean and the lunches are prepared for the next day. And then we go into a room and close the door and turn on the music and light the incense and burn a candle. And by then it's 2 o'clock in the morning and we're too tired to do anything. And we take a deep breath and say a mantra and go to bed. The point is, and that's an exaggeration, but for many people, the point is that their spiritual practice is compressed into a few moments after everything else is finished in our culture. Ours being the West. However, you go into the Native American cultures in North America, South America, again into the monasteries in Egypt and Tibet, their entire lives are the spiritual practice. And then every once in a while, they will stop that spiritual practice for a moment to make change for 20 euros. It's just the opposite of the way we think about life. So again, it's about becoming the practice and allowing it to be a way of life rather than viewing it as something that we do in a moment in time. And this is, we do the programs all over the world, and people come after the program, 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, and they say, great program, where is the next program? What should I study next? And I have to say to them, there is no more. Go home and experience and live what it is that you've learned here. But for some people, the diversion, it's easier to go from workshop to workshop and study to study and teacher to teacher rather than embrace and live what they've learned already in their lives.